good job, D. Good job. Hey, Lowther, you're going to miss.
Wow. Kind of like, hey, better, hey, better, hey, better, swing, you know?
Thank heaven for week 11. The CFL Fantasy Podcast is good to go as we get you set for a four-game week in the 11th week of the CFL season as we approach the halfway mark of 2018. Yes, we are almost there. We had a ton of points in week 10. The Calgary Stampeders are undefeated no more, and we've got a potential huge showdown with a ton of points up for grabs on Thursday Night Football. We'll get to all of it as we welcome you to the week 11 edition of the CFL Fantasy Podcast. My name is Pat Steinberg, joined alongside Hannah Nordman and Jeff Creever. Get your lineups in because the season-long winner is still in line for a $10,000 payday. Guys, let's get right into it because it was a busy CFL weekend. We did not have games on Thursday, so we had a game on Friday, two on Saturday, and then Calgary-Saskatchewan in one of the marquee matchups finished it off on Sunday night. Guys, we had a very busy weekend watching football and doing other things. What was number one priority for you guys?
Seriously, Pat, heaven, 11. No one's laughing here.
Wait, wait.
Great weekend, and great weekend for football fans. What a lot of fun that game was, especially on Sunday night. And then you had a one-point game between the Argos and Lions. And here in the city, in Toronto, we had the Canadian National Exhibition going on. I missed out this year. I usually like to go and eat a deep-fried something, ball of cookie dough or butter. Or Hannah, did you go?
I didn't. It's not really my scene. The crowds are a bit much.
Have you been before, though?
Not in Toronto. I've been to the X in Winnipeg several times. But one thing that I saw advertised is a gold foiled burger.
I saw that. That was on the broadcast.
It's a burger with gold leaf, I guess, all over the bun. It costs $100. No burger is worth $100.
Get out of here.
$100.
And someone's
for
eating
a burger
that?
Wrapped in gold. I guess somebody's buying it if they're selling it.
Sounds like a really good buy. We now out here in Calgary, we have the Calgary Stampede, which is more than 100 years old, and similar to the CNE. I believe the big thing this year was they had deep fried crickets, and I believe they had some exotic worms on pizza. Those were the two big new culinary options for you at the Calgary Stampede, because they're always bringing bizarre things. So that was what was big in July at the Calgary Stampede. So the gold-plated burger does not sound appetizing, but it sounds like it's right in line with some of the other odd choices you can get at fairs these days.
Well, maybe I'm in cranky old man get off my lawn mode, but those types of things don't sound that exciting to me right now. I don't know why how they're I don't get the appeal, but other than that, it was a great weekend, and I got into a little bit of Netflix as well. Started watching the series Disenchantment, which is from Matt Groening, who created the Simpsons and Futurama. So getting into that a little bit, and other than that, it was just low-key and enjoying some football. And how about that game on Sunday night between the live mic and Dave Dickinson's chirps, which we'll talk about, as well as a kind of an earth-shattering game between the Riders and Stamps. You had the undefeated Calgary Stampeders finally losing, and the Riders offense that we had all sort of dismissed really taking off and shocking everyone.
It was a Riders offense that got going right away, and all of a sudden the Saskatchewan Rough Riders were out to a 24-6 halftime lead on the 7-0 Calgary Stampeders. And yeah, it got a little bit more interesting in the second half as the Stamps decided to really start to air it out and connect on some big plays. But I don't know about you guys, but the biggest buzzworthy item coming from that game was what we heard from Dave Dickinson, because I got to be honest with you, if there's one coach in the CFL
NFL that I would have said, no, no, he's not going to talk trash on the sidelines. He's too focused. He's too mild-mannered. It was going to be Stamps head coach Dave Dickinson, yet we heard him chirping Brett Lowther, the kicker for the Saskatchewan Roughriders, who just happened to go 6-for-6 in that game against Calgary, asking him, or not asking him, but telling him that he was going to miss. Now, it was kind of right in the middle of some encouragement for his team, but I just thought it was so out of character, and it got Mr. Creever thinking about some of the best sports chirps that we can think of. And you know, the one that I'm going to nominate is not a sports chirp, but it was a sports moment between these same two teams. This is how I will kick off the discussion, because remember a few years ago when Stampeders running back John Cornish was caught kind of, you know, shooting the moon to Riders fans in Regina. That to me is one of the better and most memorable trash talk moments. That was more sign language, but one of the more recent trash talk moments between these two teams just happened to be a coincidence. Where would you guys go?
Well, we should hold on. I've always wanted to do this, though. We should. Hannah, can we play that? Can we play that clip?
Oh, let's, yeah. We okay. Got the clip.
All right, play the clip.
Hey, good job, D. Good job. Hey, Lowther, you're going to miss.
Wow. Kind of like, hey, better, hey, better, hey, better. It's a wing, you know?
It's like, that's awesome. With the Little League World Series going on, it fits. Lowther's been money this year, though.
20-22 now, and this is from 43 yards out.
Oh, and Lowther's looking at him too as he's running off the field like, yeah, what do you think of that?
The funny part of it is the chirp is amazing, and you like Pat, like you said, you wouldn't expect this from Dave Dickinson.
And he just slipped it in.
Yeah, he just slipped it in. But then as they cut away from the mic, and then as the broadcasters are talking again, you can hear him yelling in the background. Again, at Brett Lowther, he's yelling, don't miss. We've got a good returner back there. You don't want to miss.
That's awesome. With the Little League World Series going on, it fits.
It's incredible. And Dickinson is a all-business kind of guy. It's even funny. They cut to him later with the live mic saying to Jagarrett Davis, who might have been, you know, they were talking about whether he's going to get disqualified. And he's saying, well, if it doesn't go our way, just walk off, don't wave to the crowd, you know, all business type of thing. So to hear that coming from him was really funny. For me, I played hockey, not at a high level, but I just think of some of my own, and there were some funny things. I once remember when I wore pink laces, the ref chirped me a couple times on that, so I thought that was it was great. We had a few guys wearing them, and one ref did not take kindly to that, and some words that are not appropriate, and I won't repeat them right now, but you should never say anything like that. By the way, it was hurtful. But also, one time I got kicked out of a game with about 14 seconds left because of something one of my teammates said. I didn't even say it. And I was going, come on.
That's a big 14-second loss right there.
14 seconds. At least I wasn't out the next game. But that's the worst, when you don't even get to make the chirp and the official's taking you out of the game. And my all-time favorite is probably the Patrick Y. The Stanley Cup rings are blocking my ears. That was incredible. That was one of the...
To Jeremy Roenick, that's right.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. And that's up there, too. And just the moment of it. Hannah?
I also grew up playing hockey, and I'll tell you right now, I was not good at chirping. But, Jeff, if you're going to wear something that makes you stand out on the ice, you better be the best one out there, whether it be laces or white gloves... Or well, like a different colored helmet, you better be the best one on the ice.
We were good, and I was the leading scorer that year. I hate to brag. I don't brag. You guys know me. I'm humble about these things.
Just facts.
It kind of set a bit of a trend on that team because four or five other guys did it. So and followed suit. So
it was a team bonding moment. CFL wise, a bit of a more non-traditional chirping. I loved the tweet after the game by Saskatchewan when they said 7 and then held up a picture of Bo Levi Mitchell holding up one finger. That was great. Thought that was timely. And of course the being from Winnipeg, I know this all too well. The trading of billboards between Saskatchewan and Winnipeg, the mayors, the teams, the cities always put out billboards in the other team's city to promote their team. Always good. It's great when you step outside the box of chirping and really go for
it. You're getting strategic there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that's this time of year. That's coming up on Labor Day weekend. Mark's Labor Day weekend coming up, and that's when you get a lot of those things happening. So, and the Twitter thing could come back to haunt you. And I don't know, the social media handlers for the teams, I'm sure they don't have the coach and the GM behind their shoulder when they're tweeting these things. Because I remember, I think it was earlier this year when the Riders poked a little bit of fun about the Bombers quarterback situation and Chris Streveler starting there, and then all of a sudden, a couple of weeks later, it's Zach Collaros going down. So that can come back to bite you as well.
Well, if we want a good example of that, so here in Alberta, the Battle of Alberta is big both in the CFL and the NHL world. I want to say about 5 years ago, at the time, he was the host of Edmonton Oilers Hockey on 630 CHED in Edmonton. Dan Tenser put out a tweet right before the season started because the Flames and Oilers were playing on opening night. And to paraphrase, he basically said, "Hey, Oilers fans, do you have your rear view mirrors dusted off to be looking at the Calgary Flames for the next 5 years, 10 years, whatever?" And obviously that did not come to pass and has yet to come to pass. And every single year that tweet gets retweeted about 100-150 times by Flames fans.
Yes.
Because they like to bring it out and say, "Hey, you know, that still hasn't happened. You made yourself look kind of funny." He's a good sport about it too. So that came to mind. And also what came to mind, Creever, did you need to clarify that you didn't play hockey at a high level? I thought that was very well established. I don't think that you needed to throw that in there. I used to play hockey, but we all knew you didn't play hockey at a high level. You didn't need to clarify that.
I played at a high level in my own league. Let's just say that, at least.
Needed to bring him down a peg.
Okay, you're right. I'm here with you guys hosting the fantasy podcast. We get it. I'm not in the NHL.
Yeah. I thought that we just needed to underline the fact that that was not necessary. Also, I did need to bring you down a peg because for a third straight week, you went over 100 points in our little head-to-head battle. Creever won our little head-to-head battle between the three of us this week. His week 10 total, 107.8 points. I was next, 96.5. Hannah, 73.7 points. So Creever has taken a somewhat sizable lead in our three-way little battle. So congratulations.
Could you?
I thought I would bring you down a peg before I said good things about you.
Could you have any more sadness in your voice while you read off those scores, though? Seriously.
Oh.
And
there's nothing worse than seeing your name at the top of the list every single week. I'm happy when it's me. I'm happy when it's Hannah. But when it's you, it ruins my week. And this week is no exception.
I write my cues in the script. And I put my name in there just looking for just a little bit of attention, and you just gloss over it. Don't even talk about it. Like, we're at the 12-minute point of the podcast right now, and finally, this is the moment that we have to mention that I won the week. I think that's four straight weeks, guys.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. I need to shake something up again because it's not working. Pat, we got to take him down. A couple pegs.
Yeah, he needs to be brought back down to size because, as we've talked about on this podcast before, you know, Jeff does the rundown, and we're very appreciative of you doing the rundown. It's a lot of work that you put into it, but, you know, I don't need to hear things or see things like Jeff Creever's reign of terror over the rest of the fantasy world continues. I don't know if you noticed, but I skipped that part in the opening. I decided to go my own direction as opposed to read that word for word. I don't need to see these things, and the only time I see these things is when you have good weeks. So, yeah, we need to take him down and take him down hard. So we'll see if we can do that. I'm hoping that we can in the near future. By the way, in week 10, this is what we're looking at in terms of some of the highlights. How about everybody loading up on the Eskimos, which was a good call, but it wasn't an Edmonton player who ended up leading the way in week 10. No, it was Winnipeg's Darvin Adams. Two touchdowns, 36.2 points. That's the fourth highest highest single game total all year long and the second highest total from a receiver. Mike Riley, not far behind. 36 points was pretty close to the projection of 40 plus, the third best quarterback total of the season. And he did indeed, as projected, feast on the Alouettes defense. Four total touchdowns. William Powell matched his jersey number of 29. He led all running backs. That was the third highest total for a running back this season. Of course, Winnipeg's Andrew Harris has the two highest. Shaq Cooper, replacing C.J. Gable at running back for Edmonton, had himself a heck of a week, cost just $2,500, and came away with 25.3 points. Other cheap breakout stars in Week 10, Edmonton's Bryant Mitchell finally coming through with 26 points, and Jordan Williams-Lambert had a good game for Saskatchewan at receiver against Calgary with 25. There were some busts, though, as Nick Dembski struggled with 5 points. Chris Rainey was a big buy. He only had 6.5 points. Marcus Thigpen, 4.3. SJ Green, 4.8. Those were some of the biggest disappointments in Week 10. So that's our look back at Week 10. As we start to look ahead to Week 11, it is the CFL Fantasy Podcast. We've got four games in Week 11, including our final Thursday night football matchup. But let's get a little bit deeper into one half of that game that we saw on Sunday. The Riders upsetting the Stampeders, knocking them off their undefeated perch. And as Saskatchewan gets set for a big game on Saturday against BC, all of us were a little hesitant to be talking about a lot of Riders players offensively, especially in the passing game. I think all three of us were almost dismissive for a long time about Zach Caleros and what that group can do offensively. Well, give Caleros credit because he looked good against the Stampeders on Sunday. Now, from a fantasy perspective, did not put up a lot of points, no touchdowns, under 300 yards, but in the first half especially, he really looked like he had found something. So, guys, is it time to maybe start to change the way we're thinking on the Saskatchewan Roughriders and their offense specifically, or is it too early to say they've turned the corner?
At the very least, I mean, that should be opening your eyes, and I will step up and with apologies to Zach Calaro, say that I was wrong about him. I'm ready to say that. I thought that coming from Hamilton, Zach Calaro was a quarterback that had lost his confidence and just hadn't, with all the injuries, been able to regain the form that he had in 2015, a season when he really should have won most outstanding player before getting injured. Zach is back, and that's what I saw the other night. And we've seen it a couple games because he was pretty good in the previous game against the Edmonton Eskimos as well, although that was a loss. But I really liked what the Riders did, and it's funny, we debated about it last week with them releasing Duran, and I thought this signaled just a real tight-knit, ball possession, run the football, short passing type of game. And there was still a lot of that. Zach completed most of his passes. There were a lot of short ones. The average was pretty low for him, but he took his shots. And he used Williams-Lambert downfield, and he took his shots to Shaq Evans. And I just, it looked like a little bit of an awakening of sorts to me that the Calgary Stampeders may not have seen coming, given the way the Riders have played this year. So, yeah, my eyes are wide open, and I'm even considering taking some of those players, including Zach Caleros, this coming week.
But you have to be saying that from a player standpoint, right? Because fantasy-wise, his value is not that high. 10.8 points this week, his last game 15. That's been his highest week so far. What is indicating that he's going to be able to put up a serviceable fantasy value?
So for me, with him being under 6K, what defines serviceable? I mean, if you're looking at 18 points, that's over three times his salary. That's serviceable. Now, he hasn't done that yet.
He has not.
Just remember, last game was against the Calgary Stampeders, and quarterbacks have not had fun against that team. In fact, a lot of teams have been held under 20 points, under 15 points, and some of them even under 10 points. Not talking fantasy totals, talking points in the football game. So for him to do what he did against the Stamps, the passing numbers were there. The only thing that was detracting from Zach's potential fantasy numbers were passing touchdowns. And every time they got near the red zone, they settled for field goals. That guy that Dave Dickinson chirped, Brett Lothar, he had six of them. He was 6 for 6. It was the defense and special teams scoring touchdowns for the Riders.
Yeah, that's a big asterisk.
Yeah, but they moved the football. And I'm one to take process over results here, in the sense that if the quarterback can move the ball up and down the field and he can do it consistently, if he's not putting up touchdowns, that's probably going to change. Hey, I'm in the same camp with Jeremiah Mazzoli. Now, Pat, you've been quiet on this for the last few minutes. What's your take on it?
Well, I'm kind of with Hannah in that I'm a little bit more wait and see, because, and I know we're going to get into this a little bit later on the great debate, but I look at it and I say to myself, yep, you know what? Calero showed me something on Sunday. He moved the ball, especially in the first half. That Riders offense looked efficient. He used Naaman Roosevelt. He used Jordan Williams-Lambert. To go back to a conversation from last week, kind of used some different options in the run game, and Trey Mason looked good at times. And so it was a much more impressive showing from the Riders offense than A, I was expecting against the Stamps, and B, that we've seen in a little while. But I'm not ready to sit here and put a ton of fantasy stock in anything, just because we still haven't seen the fantasy totals start to rack up. You know, for instance, a guy like McLeod Bethel-Thompson, yeah, he's been a little bit in two starts. He's given me a little bit more confidence to put him in at $6,000 than perhaps Calero said at under $6,000 at this point. So I'm not quite ready to buy in on the Riders offensively, especially from a fantasy standpoint. But at the very least, they're showing some signs of life and maybe some signs that they're starting to awaken. So that's kind of where I come in on this conversation.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I think when we're looking at it from a fantasy perspective, and I'll wrap this up and throw it to Hannah for news, but I it's all relative as far as where does Zach compare with his matchup against the other fantasy options. And this week I look at McLeod Bethel-Thompson as being option 1A at $6,000. He's got a good salary. He's got the best matchup. We'll talk plenty about that. And then, you know, Mike Riley, Jeremiah Mazzoli, other quarterbacks you'd have to consider, guys that have just been playing good football, and they're expensive, but they're worth getting in your lineup. So Zach at his cost, I think he's entering the discussion with a good matchup against the Lions. But we'll see.
All right. Well, let's do it. It is week 11. We've got four games. We've got some interesting matchups. What do we need to know, Hannah? It's time for the Fantasy Flash.
I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen. Cannonball!
All right, well, the biggest question on a lot of our minds, will Johnny Manziel be back for the Alouettes? If not, it'll be Antonio Pipkin getting his second straight start against Toronto on Friday. It is important to note, according to John Liu, Manziel did not practice on Tuesday. It's early, but CJ Gable is back on track to return in week 11, according to Dave Campbell of Ched. The Eskimos star running back missed Saturday's win over Montreal. It sounds like Tyrell Sutton's injury isn't as bad as initially feared, according to Herb Zerkowski, as it appears to be an injured quad. Don't expect him back for week 11. William Stanback is the projected starter. One more note from the Alouettes, they have released receiver TJ Graham. Finally, continue to keep an eye on the Stamps running back situation, which has been full of surprises. Last week, it was believed that Don Jackson would be back, but he wasn't ready yet. If you're going to play a Calgary running back, stay up to date.
Okay, so we've got Riders. We've got some lingering Jerron Carter talk, I'm sure, because they looked great without him. How much of that was a result of him being out of the picture? That's up for debate. Well, let's talk about the game that almost didn't happen. There was talk that the Eskimos game might not happen because of all the smoke. Crazy sights in Alberta. Which, Pat, what did you see any of that from Calgary, or was that just like an Edmonton thing? Yeah.
Oh yeah. Last week there were two straight days where it looked like the apocalypse out here. Like it is smoky. You should not wake up and see an orange sky. Blue sky, fine. Gray sky, yeah, used to that. Orange sky, yeah, that's not as comforting. You're wondering if there's going to be, you know, flying men on horses about to come conquer you. So it has been weird. It's starting to clear, but now it's nowhere near as bad as it's been in some of the areas of interior British Columbia, where it has looked like it is nighttime at 2 p.m. because the smoke has been so thick. I know there's been some evacuations and stuff like that, but no, definitely it's been smoky for the last about 2 weeks around these parts in both Edmonton and Calgary.
That's really scary, and I did see some images of it, and it looked, even from Edmonton, when they were debating whether the game would be played a couple days before the game, it looked like, you said, it looked like there it was nighttime or almost nightfall and the sky was red. That's just, some people were saying that they've lived there their whole lives, they said they've never seen it like that before. So that's unbelievable. Let's talk about that Eskimos Ticats matchup, because the Esks prevailed as expected against the Montreal Alouettes and rolled up 500 plus yards against them. And we said last week, if you're going to take Mike Riley, that was the game to do it. Well, he had a huge week, and he is the best quarterback in fantasy if you can afford him. This week, we get to see Mike Riley versus Jeremiah Mazzoli, a matchup that was outstanding the last time these two teams played. The Ticats went into Edmonton and upset the Eskimos. That was sort of Mazzoli's big breakout game with 29.2 points. We have the numbers in front of us here. Should we expect more of the same in this rematch, not just from the quarterbacks, but from the playmakers that are in this game?
It's one of those games where I'd be surprised if specifically in the passing side of things, we don't see some big numbers once again. We're talking about the number one and the number three passing offenses in the CFL in Edmonton and Hamilton. When they met earlier, we saw a lot of numbers and a lot of points put up. I'm looking at a lot of players in this game as really solid options, regardless of the prices that they come in at. Both quarterbacks, I think, are solid options to get in your lineup if you're willing to spend that type of money on a quarterback. I think that Brandon Banks is a big time look this week. I wonder a little bit about Luke Tasker too, because good chance he'll be the number two option for Jeremiah Mazzoli. On the Edmonton side of things, Bryant Mitchell had his breakout game, but you've also got the two-headed monster in Duke Williams and Darrell Walker. I really look at any passing option, quarterback or receiver, that you would think about any other week to get in your lineup, and I think they're really, really good options to put in this week, because knowing how much both of these teams pass the ball and knowing how good they are and how prolific their quarterbacks are, I think this could be a big week for receivers and a big week for passing yards in that Edmonton and Hamilton matchup. That's one that I'm really looking at this week.
Yeah, looking at the first draft of my team this week, about almost two-thirds of my salary is sunk into this game. I'm definitely looking at Riley this week. It's kind of the move that I go to when I've had a couple weeks that haven't been great. I kind of go back to what you know works. And Mike Riley is always a good choice. I know he's expensive, but so far I have Riley and Duke Williams in there, and I'm fitting under the cap. So I'm really excited to watch this matchup specifically.
Last time, Mike Riley had 26 points against the Hamilton Tiger Cats, which is pretty good. At the time, it was one of the higher scores of the season for a quarterback, so you were probably happy with that. To be honest with you guys, I like Jeremiah Mazzoli better in this matchup. And the Ticats defense has been really stingy this year. They're third ranked in the league, so that's going to make things tough for Mike Riley. That defense made things tough on Trevor Harris, made things tough on Matt Nichols, just has made things difficult for all opponents this year. Jerry Glanville's done a great job, and the addition of Delvin Bro has been huge. So be aware of that if you're going to sink 14K into Mike Riley. And Mazzoli, the last time he played this team, he put up 29.2 points, and he's $4,000 cheaper. So, hey, I wrote in the notes here, and I've said this a few times, I like to write it, Mike Riley versus Mike Riley light, because that's what I see Jeremiah Mazzoli as, especially with his ability to run around there. And don't kid yourself, that Ticats offense is insanely productive, the second most productive offense in the CFL. And Mazzoli with 8 touchdown passes this season, I know I sound like a broken record, but he has got to start throwing touchdown passes, and they are going to come in spades. They really are.
That's Mazzoli's best total of the year so far, and he had 3 touchdowns that game. Every other game, it's been either he's had one other multi-touchdown game against Montreal. The rest have either been 0 or 1. So he really tore it up that game. I can see him doing it again. I like both sides of the ball in this one. I think if you load it up on just these two teams, you'd be fine this week.
What's really interesting, guys, is that, you know, Jeff, you mentioned Hamilton defensively. Well, we are talking about the number one and the number three passing offenses in the CFL. We're also talking about the number one and number three passing defenses in the CFL. Hamilton number one, Edmonton number three. And what really adds to the intrigue of this game is that both teams are pretty solid. They've got solid secondaries. The running game in this matchup is really intriguing to me. You've got C.J. Gable taking on his former team on the Edmonton side of things. Alex Green has had a couple of really productive weeks going into Hamilton's bye. So I also, as much as I like the receivers and the quarterbacks in this game, knowing how prolific these two teams can be, I also think because both teams have solid pasties, I wonder how much the run game comes into it. And that's why I also look at Green and Gable as really solid buys for week 11 too. Like, all across the board, I think there's some big time points to be had here.
Yeah, and I like the running backs there too, and they could be the ones, if, especially if it's a high scoring game, they could be the ones to reap the benefits of that and getting the opportunities down near the goal line. They're probably not going to be owned as much. And a couple of other factors, I think, that play into this. You're looking at June Jones off a bye week, so that's something there for the Ticats offense. I think that gives them an edge. I do think that advantage in this league can't be said enough. That June Jones, being the offensive mind that he is, and with the weapons that he has in Hamilton and the quarterback that he has with Jeremiah Mazzoli, having the extra week to prepare is going to do a lot. And the other aspect that should come into play that I've seen so far this year is the Eskimos have had a little bit of trouble against running quarterbacks. And it was the same thing last week with Pipkin. Antonio Pipkin looked good last week, and we won't dwell on it. We'll talk about Pipkin a little bit later, especially with him and Manziel being in contention to start next week. But Pipkin looked good, and he used his legs to get out of the pocket, break containment, and he made some great throws downfield. So if Mike Benavides' defense can't figure that out, I think Mazzoli could really do something this week.
On the Hamilton side of the ball, without Jalen Saunders, is Banks kind of your go-to guy on Hamilton?
I think he's got to be. I think he's got to be, at this point, one of the most viable fantasy options for Week 11. I know that he comes in at a big price tag. He's over $9,000. But knowing what we think we know about this matchup and knowing how much the Ticats like to pass the ball, Craver, I look at Brandon Banks as one of those guys that you almost have to, if you're not going to put him in your lineup, at the very least you have to consider putting him in your lineup for week 11 and think really hard about it.
The only reason that you wouldn't would be the price tag, right? I mean, he's the most expensive receiver, over $9,000 right now. So yeah. That is going to create some obstacles, especially if you have Jeremiah Mazzoli or Mike Riley in your lineup. That doesn't leave a lot left there. But yeah, if you're going to take a Ticats receiver, especially if Jalen Saunders is out, that's the guy to take. I don't know. There could be some value with Luke Tasker, Terrence Tolliver, Chris Williams. I don't know if I trust those guys at this time. And on the other side, I would rather go than those guys. I would rather go with the Eskimo supporting cast when you've got players like Kenny Stafford. And what about Bryant Mitchell? Pat, I know how high you are on him.
Yep.
You had him a couple of times as your money pick when he was a backup, something that sort of raised my eyebrows a little bit. But it looks like you were on to something, because we talked about him earlier in the year and how talented he is, and he's good. I mean, coming into the year, I had Bryant Mitchell ahead of Duke Williams as far as who's going to be the big breakout receiver to step into the shoes of Brandon Zylstra this year. And maybe he would have been had he not gotten hurt in camp, and Duke kind of took that opportunity and ran with it. But what's clear from last game is that Bryant Mitchell is a superbly talented receiver. Yep. And now it looks like he's going to be in the lineup every week.
Yep, good player, and it just adds to the weapons that they have in Edmonton, and adds to the only thing I would worry about a little bit, worry's the wrong word, but because Bryant Mitchell had such a big game against Montreal, because they are starting to establish him a little bit more, what does that do to the fantasy values of guys like Darrell Walker and Duke Williams, who have been such mainstays for everybody all year long? Now, I'm not quite ready to sit here and say, oh, beware of Walker and Duke. But I do wonder a little bit, knowing how talented Bryant Mitchell is, what he did against Montreal. Does that mean that we start to see Mike Riley try and use him a little bit more in the offense? Because, you know, there's only so many balls and passes to go around. So that is one thing I've got my eye on, but I'm not ready to say that, you know, their fantasy values have been hit yet.
Yeah, my concern there, and something that I was going back and forth on, is that for the first 6 weeks of the season, Duke Williams and Darrell Walker were both having big weeks. And for the past three, it's kind of been one or the other. So how do you make the right choice? They're only about $200 apart. I'm probably going to go back and forth between the two a few times until then. I don't think either of them are going to be a big miss, but one of them's going to be a lot higher than the other, it seems.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. I do not have Duke Williams or Darrell Walker in my lineup this week, and I won't. Not against the top pass defense in the CFL, as Pat mentioned. And now with the emergence of Bryant Mitchell, I would honestly much rather go with one of those third or fourth options in that offense, because you're paying less and you've still got the potential for a massive breakout game. And it's not that Bryant Mitchell lacks the talent. He doesn't. He's there. He's right there with those guys. So it's a bit of a game of roulette that you're playing. And if you're going to play roulette right now, I'd rather do it with a $4,000 receiver than an $8,000 receiver.
Yeah, the value can be found there. And if you're not looking to spend over $10,000 on your quarterback, McLeod Bethel-Thompson is still there. He's had two pretty good weeks, one amazing week, one week last week that wasn't as great fantasy-wise but looked good. Is he the top playing quarterback right now up against Montreal? Because we all know how good weeks can be when you're up against the Alouettes.
Can we call him the top play? Probably not. Can we call him the top value play? Yeah, I think probably. It's $6,000 going up.
Yeah, the same thing.
Going
not
up against Montreal?
Thing.
Yeah, like I think he's a good value play, and right now as it stands, looking at my roster on my team right now, McLeod Bethel-Thompson is in. I like the matchup too much. I like the price tag too much, and I like what he's done too much. He's 2-0 as a starter. He's looked good, and I think that he's obviously his second start wasn't anywhere near as big as his first start in terms of fantasy points. But you know, you take a look at this matchup as opposed to the matchup last week. We've talked about how BC has maybe turned the corner a little bit defensively. Well, yeah, I think that there's something to be said for that. Well, I don't think you can say the same thing about Montreal's defense. They still are very much a work in progress, and a lot of progress needs to be made. So, yeah, I think he is a very intriguing play. McLeod Bethel-Thompson is in my lineup. He's my quarterback for Week 11.
We're really getting into semantics here when we say, come on, top QB play. That's what was written here as the question. That's the top play as far as value and production combined. The player that's giving you the most bang for your buck. That's the top play. That's who wouldn't want that? I mean, would I rather have Mike Riley at 14,000 and get 25 points, or would I rather have McLeod Bethel-Thompson at 6,000 and get you 20 points? The answer is obvious. Who's the better play?
I think what we mean is the top play is who's going to get you the most points, period, regardless of dollar value. And then when you take into account, you're the one who's turning it into semantics. I think that when you start to weigh in the dollar figure, that's where McLeod Bethel-Thompson becomes a little bit more of an intriguing play. Because, yeah, I think Mazzoli and Riley are probably good for more straight-up points than Bethel-Thompson is, but they come at a whole lot larger of a price tag. So you're the one who brought in the semantics.
All right, I'm just going to end it here. I'm going to be the bigger man and just walk away from this argument and move on. I'm going to pair McLeod Bethel-Thompson possibly with James Wilder, because you can get that pairing, and it's a nice little stack for, what is it, 9 plus 6, 15. Don't test my math right now. About $15,000, which is a grand more than Mike Riley, and I think that's terrific. Getting those two in your lineup, and you know that McLeod Bethel-Thompson likes to throw it to James Wilder Jr., and you know that the Argos are going to be feeding Wilder the football. So in that game, I'm looking at those two as a stellar play that's not going to break your bank. And with the savings on McLeod Bethel-Thompson, you've even got a chance to play a stud running back second to James Wilder Jr. I mean, we're not talking Andrew Harris here, but someone who's pretty good. So, to me, that's a great stack. And if I had to pick one stack for this week, that would be it.
We may not agree on the semantics, but I think we all agree that McLeod Bethel-Thompson is a good, viable play this week. Last week, I played him so I could get some bigger-priced guys in my lineup, and it really didn't work out for me. Only 77 points. My saving grace is the fact that Gable didn't play, and I had to switch him out for Powell. I can't imagine what my total might have been had that not happened.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you can save the money, you can get the bigger names in there. It's not always going to work out for you. I like the guaranteed points, and Mike Riley is as close as you get to a guarantee.
Well, there's something to be said for that. And the only thing you have to look at is with McLeod Bethel-Thompson, Macbeth, as I wrote here, that's what people are calling him. I love that nickname. I really hope that takes off. And I'm not even a big Shakespeare guy, But Macbeth is just awesome.
McLeod Bethel Thompson is a mouthful.
Exactly. We need something shorter to say. Macbeth is perfect, or McLeod, I guess. Hyphen. Marshall Ferguson calls him hyphen on Twitter. I love that.
There's a lot of hyphens in this league, though.
There are a few hyphens, but I think he's the first quarterback with a hyphen in his name that I can think of.
A quarterback none of us were looking at or even thinking about, Antonio Pipkin. Only 250 people took him this week. That was some good value. 19 points for only $2,500. So, are either of you even considering putting him in this week?
No. Not me. And it's funny, 250 people chose him last week, and he had amazing value if you took him. And I even thought about it. I was talking with Robbie in the office, Rob Abramson, and we said, we even played with it. What could you do with your lineup if you have a $2,500 quarterback? The answer was, you can do amazing things with it. And we should have stuck with it. 19 points he had. Problem is, now the game has sort of picked up on that and is putting an end to that. They're not going to allow that. He costs $5,000 this week. You cannot get Antonio Pipkin at $2,500.
Yeah, but always nice of the game when they double a guy's a guy's salary in 1 week.
But the kid looked good. I mean, 23 years old, and his first career start, they cut him in preseason or training camp, and it's like, okay, everybody's gotten injured. Drew Willey, Jeff Matthews, now Johnny Manziel. Matt Schiltz got injured. We want you back, Antonio, and you know what? For good measure, we're just going to throw you in the game right now. And he did all right. He looked pretty good.
The pride of Tiffin University, Antonio Pipkin. I thought he showed some really nice flashes for a guy who was way down on the quarterback depth chart, a 23-year-old rookie with very limited work with the first team offense, to come in and play the way he did against the Edmonton Eskimos. I liked him. And am I looking at putting him in my lineup? No, but it really does kind of throw a wrench into one of our favorite topics all year long, and that is Johnny Manziel and what his fantasy value is. And as of this taping, we don't know Manziel's status as to whether or not he's going to play in Week 11 in Montreal's matchup against Toronto. But this week's Berg versus Ferg is talking about whether or not you go to Pipkin and stay with him for a little bit. And I was arguing, yeah, the very least for the time being. I think from what you saw from him, where the Alouettes are at 1-8 and knowing the type of season they're having, as much as you need to see what you have in Johnny Manziel, why not see what you have in Antonio Pipkin? Because, guys, he showed some decent flashes. So is it enough for me to get him in my lineup for Week 11? No, I'm going with the other quarterback in that matchup. But is it enough that he deserves another shot and maybe allows you, if you're listening, to take a look at him? Yeah, he's earned that opportunity for sure.
I thought we were done with talking about Manziel for a little while. The guy, it's funny. His name, how many times has his name come up on this podcast? We need a Manziel counter. The guy's not even relevant right now. He didn't play last week and probably won't play this week, and here we are. But Pipkin, I think it's worth a look this week. I mean, the other guy we're talking about has made two career starts, and Antonio Pipkin looked good. And the thing about Pipkin is, he runs the ball. And I don't know, he only had 26 rushing yards last week, but I don't know if you've seen his college highlights. Have you seen the guy run the football? He could rack up 100 rushing yards if he's put in a situation where he's running around and needs to do that. And the Argos defense continues to struggle. I mean, Mike Archer, defensive coordinator in his first year there, I'm not saying he's not going to be a good one. Defensive coordinators need a little bit of time in this league to figure things out. But that defense hasn't exactly been flying around out there. They've given up a lot of yards and gave up a lot of yards to BC again last week. Probably would have lost the game if not for that Manny fumble. But anyway, I digress. I think even at 5,000, Pipkin's worth at least consideration. If you're 2,500, I'd be all over that.
Yeah, with the fourth best quarterback total last week, I'd say he's definitely earned the right to have a second straight start in Montreal as well. Tyrell Sutton is injured. It could be a while. William Standback at $4,000 is his replacement. He's done return duties. He's looked good in game action. Are you guys looking at him as a viable option? At $4,000, that's a pretty cheap price to pay, but of course you run the risk of taking an Alouettes player, which is pretty much a gamble every week.
Although, this might be the week, guys. Like, with is this maybe not the week, especially in the run game, to think about it? I mean, Jeff, you just talked about how that Toronto defense continues to struggle. They're averaging more than 115 yards against on the ground. If there's a week to take a gamble on an Alouettes player like Stanback, and at $4,000, it's not a crazy gamble, this might be the week, because there are some yards to be had against Toronto.
I will throw a little bit of caution at you there and say I don't think the Argos run defense is as bad as people are making it out to be, and as bad as the numbers say. I think that number has been inflated by a couple of early season losses, including the one to Calgary where they were down and out early in the game. And with Cleon Lang in the middle and Bear Woods possibly back soon, the teams should be attacking the Argos through the air more than anything. But, yeah, I like Stan back there. He's looked really good when he's been in the game, just 24 years old this year, and you would think he's not that big the way he runs because he looks fast, but he is huge. He's 233 pounds, and he returns kicks. How many times have you seen a 233-pound running back return kickoffs? I mean, that's, to me, that tells you that that's a player that is very gifted and has a unique skill set. I'm not saying he's like Wilder. He's not. He's not the same player. But that's what makes James Wilder so special, is he's got a skill set that is very unique to the league. And I think Stanback is a little bit similar with his blend of size and speed and what he's done on the field. He's been quite productive.
The Montreal running offense as a whole didn't put up 10 points last week, though. Did they? There's not a lot of points to go around on this running offense.
That's the problem. When you have a team that's not scoring, that's where you're really going to lose your production. And then when you have a team that's 1-8 and is losing every game and is trailing from the beginning of games, they're not going to put up the numbers as far as attempts. So it's a risk. And does William Stanback score a touchdown this week? That's pretty hard to say definitively. And that, if that's true and if that's what you believe in, then obviously the ceiling isn't there, but at $4,000, maybe it's worth the risk.
Yeah, I think the ceiling is a little low for a guy who's at $4,000, because you can get guys for less than that. Pat and I were kind of saying it's tough to find some value in here, but the value is there, and one of those is Jordan Williams-Lambert, who's still in money pick range right now. He looked great last week, 25 points, big breakout week for him. Is he now the top receiver in Saskatchewan?
Can I just say that your segues are just incredible today? I'm not even expecting it, and all of a sudden, boom, we're in the next topic.
Here we are.
It's like magic.
Let's keep the ship going.
I'm impressed. I just wanted to throw that in there. Jordan Williams-Lambert, and I think it's pretty hard to disagree on this, at $3,500, actually $4 under that. He's a guy that you probably need to have in your lineup this week, unless you have a strong doubt and a real reason to believe that he's not going to get the same touches. Look, the Riders are playing against the BC Lions, which is a defense that has struggled against slot receivers when you look at what Duke Williams has done all year. And here we are with Jordan Williams-Lambert getting consistent production. Hannah had her crystal ball out about a month ago or a few weeks ago when she made him her money pick. And she saw something that the rest of us didn't see. But right now, with the way he played against the Calgary Stampeders, it should be obvious. This is a big guy. This is a big play guy. And when I watch him play and I watch him run, he almost looks like a Duke Williams clone. Not to mention they have the same last name, almost. He's another guy with a hyphen in his name.
Close enough.
I love him. And he's in my lineup this week. He's the first guy I put in my lineup because he gives you that massive ceiling. If he's Zach's number one, if he's the number one receiver of Zach Collaros this week, and he's only costing you $3,500, which would qualify as a money pick for him, but we discussed it beforehand, and we can't even call him a money pick because it's not even fair, he should be in your lineup. 100% he should be.
Yep, he's in my lineup, and it's tough to not have him in. Last 3 weeks, at money pick prices, all around $3,000. This week, just under $3,500. Last 4 weeks, three of the last 4 weeks, he's gone double digits. Last week, obviously huge, because had 152 passing yards, so 25.2 fantasy points for him last week. But against Edmonton, he was up over 12. Against Hamilton in week 6, he was up over 11. This guy has been a solid fantasy buy for a little while. Now, the type of production you got from him in week 10 against the Stampeders is huge. And even if he's not the number number one receiver in Saskatchewan, even if Zach Caleros looks to Naaman Roosevelt a little bit more in this matchup against BC on Saturday. At worst, Williams Lambert is the number two. And you mentioned how the Lions have struggled against slot receivers, and I think that there is, regardless, a matchup to exploit there with Williams Lambert. Even if he is not the guy that Caleros goes to right off the bat on every single play call, this guy is way too cheap at $34.96 to look away from. I don't know how you don't have Williams Lambert in your lineup for Week 11. That one seems like the biggest no-brainer. I'd be fascinated to see the ownership stats coming out of Week 11 for this guy.
Yeah, they should be big, and just like Jeff, he's the first guy that I slotted into my lineup. I knew he was going to be there. The value is too good, so he is there. We've got one more matchup to talk about. That's the Winnipeg-Calgary matchup on Saturday. It's a nice Saturday afternoon game, and this one scares me a little, much like the Calgary-Saskatchewan matchup did, because it's two big defensive teams, but that didn't really seem to matter last week, as they both put up some pretty good points. So are you guys looking to buy in on this one? I think my money's going elsewhere. I don't know if I'm putting anyone from this matchup in, with possibly the exception of Kamar Jordan, who seems to be a good buy every week.
Well, I mean, it's one of those games where I look at it and I say, okay, we are talking about two defensive groups, but a lot of times when the Stampeders have been in those situations, there's been some points scored. I mean, you take a look at the two games they've played against Saskatchewan, I would say both of those games, certainly the last matchup more so than the first, but even in both occurrences between the Riders and the Stampeders, the points have been a little higher than we're expecting. I don't think that you look at this game anywhere near the same way you look at the Edmonton-Hamilton game, but Jeff, I don't know. I'm not necessarily shying away in a big way from this game either, just because I do think there are some good, especially on the Calgary side of things, there are some pretty solid and proven contributors on the offensive side of the ball. So I don't think I'm not crossing my fingers and hexing this game, but I'm also not looking huge into this one. I do think there are better options in Week 11.
Yeah, the Bombers are one of those teams that is really hard to read. They're really tough to read. And it's funny because they've been up and around the top of the league as far as scoring each week. Yet when it comes to offensive production, they're not there, but they're just with their defense and special teams and big plays that they get on the offensive side of the ball. We saw a couple from Darvin Adams last week. The new receiver, Ryan Lankford, almost had one just go through his hands when he hit the ground near the end zone. There's the potential for that game to go off and be a high-scoring game, but just with the way Winnipeg's offense is struggling right now and Calgary's defense looking for a rebound game to bounce back, I think it's tough to trust anyone on the Bombers going into this one, even Andrew Harris, especially at Andrew Harris's price tag. There's one player that I love here, and I can't talk enough right now, and you mentioned him. It's Kamar Jordan. And I think there's a solid argument to be made that Kamar Jordan is becoming or has become the number one fantasy receiver in the game ever since the injury to Aaron Rodgers, because everything on that offense, they're not running the ball right now. They're not running the ball well, at least recently. Everything goes through Kamar Jordan right now. And, Pat, you see it every game. This guy's a freak. I mean, to me, physically and athletically, he's incredible. He can win any battle one-on-one. He's the reach that he has. It's unbelievable. And it seems like he catches everything. I mean, he had a bad fumble at one point in his career that I won't go into. But he's all over the field. He's everywhere. Last game, I don't think he had a catch in the first half. And then he comes back in the second half and ends up making what looked like to me the catch of the year. It's the best catch I've seen this season. He's unbelievable, and it's like he's got magnets on his gloves or super glue or something, and it just every football seems to gravitate towards him. I love this guy, and I can't say enough about him.
The only thing I will disagree on is it's hard for me to call a Stampeders receiver the number one fantasy option right now, because Kamar Jordan wasn't the top play from the Stampeders in Week 10. Tavares Daniels was the guy who led the way in yardage, and he had the two touchdowns. And look, I'm not saying Kamar Jordan's not a solid play, because he is consistent. What he's done the last few weeks is really, really strong. But I still think when you factor in Juwan Breskison, who they really like, and I think is becoming a bigger part part of that offense, and Markin Michelle is still a very talented receiver that can go off in any given week. Even without Aaron Rodgers, you're talking about Devaris Daniels, Kamar Jordan, Breskison, and Michelle, and in any given week, it could be one of those guys who kind of runs it at the top. Now, of those four, is Jordan the most consistent? Probably because of all the things that you just talked about. I mean, your scouting report on Kamar Jordan is bang on. The guy is an absolute freak, and yeah, he reminds me of the little Giants when Buddy put the stuff on his gloves so that he could catch it. Like that's what he's got, except he doesn't need to put stuff on his gloves. But it's hard for me to talk about any Stampeders receiver as the number one fantasy option just because of the risk that on any given week he might be taken out of the equation and somebody else goes in there. Now, you know, if we're continuing to talk about 20-point averages for Kamar Jordan over the next 3-4 weeks, yeah, okay, my opinion's going to change. But right now, that's still where I'm lying on the Stampeders, just the number of options.
Yeah, but if you're waiting for that, you're going to pay $10,000 for the guy.
That's true. For instance, you know, you take Kamar Jordan's at 84 and Devaris Daniels is at 59. Like that's a $2,500 gap between the two, and Devaris Daniels at $5,900. We're talking about value plays. I think there's more value in Devaris Daniels than there is in Kamar Jordan right now.
I love Devaris Daniels. I thought he was on the verge of becoming one of the CFL's best receivers a couple of years ago, but when you compare those two, you can't tell me that you feel more comfortable with Devaris Daniels than with Kamar Jordan. Kamar Jordan has
The Stampeders, and it can happen any given week. Again,
no, I don't think
Devaris
so.
Daniels was the guy last week. He was the one who led the way receiving wise.
Kamar Jordan still had 19.6 points. I'm not complaining about that.
He was very strong, but I'm just saying that I'm just as confident in $5,900 for Daniels than I am in $8,500 or $8,400 for Jordan. And it's the Stampeders' curse that they've just got too many options at receiver.
I don't agree, but I don't at the risk of beating a dead horse, no pun intended, completely came up with that off the top of my head. I suppose we'll move on. Should we move on to the great debate?
Great debate. Today we're talking Saskatchewan, and by we, I mean you two, because I'm
full
hosting.
Circle. Full
yeah.
circle.
Full That's circle. Fine. We started there. We're going to end there. This is not Zach Caleros specific. It is Saskatchewan as a whole and their offense. How are you two feeling about this offense? Are you buying in on Saskatchewan or are you selling?
Can we just do one where we just like yell at each other at the same time and there's no organization and it's complete chaos?
No, think of the listeners, Jeff. Think of the listeners.
Think of me
think
as the one
Hannah.
Who edits this podcast.
Think
I'm
going to
say hard no on that. Hard no.
Right. It was a fun idea.
We're taking turns. Pat, I'm going to let you call this one in the air as we do our ceremonial coin flip. So call it right now.
I will be loyal to the queen. I go heads.
All right. Well, it landed like 10 seconds ago, so it wasn't really in the air, but it was heads. So, Pat, you're up first. What
Most
side are you taking?
Dramatic, delayed call
right.
in the air
it
ever.
It was.
Let me just get my stopwatch ready.
By the way, Pat, you have the option to defer or go first.
No, you know what? I don't need to defer. I feel very confident, and I like to set the tone because I don't have a whole lot of confidence that you'll be able to hit the same bar. So I'm ready to rock and roll as I start my 30-second stopwatch. Have the Saskatchewan Roughriders turned a corner offensively? Maybe, maybe not. And look, you can get a lot out of a matchup against a defense like the Calgary Stampeders in terms of evaluation, and I liked a lot of what I saw. But to sit here and say that no questions asked, Zach Caleros and that offense is all of a sudden going to be a viable week-in, week-out fantasy option, it's way too early. They've been too anemic for too long. I liked what I saw against Calgary, but I'm not ready to say that they've turned the corner just yet.
Nice time-wise. All right.
That's pretty good. What was it? What did we get? 29 seconds?
29 point something, yeah.
29 point something.
There
All
we
right.
go. Whew. Jeff,
pressure,
you're on the clock.
Pressure. Wait. I don't like it with it starting in front of me because now I can see it's like, do I start or does the clock start? How does this?
You start, all press go.
Okay. Zach Caleros looked like there was a light going on in his head there. It looked like he was starting to play like the MOP that we saw that he should have been in 2015. And the Riders offense, they've got a lot of explosive players there. We argued about Trey Mason last week, Marcus Thigpen. Those are two guys that can score on any given play. And the receivers, Shaq Evans, Ryan Hyphen, whatever his name is, Williams Lambert. Taking up too much time on this, but Chris Jones knows what he's doing, and this offense is back to looking explosive.
All right, he got rattled by the clock there, Pat. I could see him looking.
Because Pat does this in Calgary, and we do it here in Toronto. Pat, do you have a clock in front of you when you do it?
I do. I pull it up on the iPhone, and I start the 30-second clock. It's how you make sure that you get right on 30 seconds.
Yeah, but you know what? It's Hannah's right. It kind of messed me up a little bit there.
Oh, it rattled him.
I think in the future I want to do it as the clock runs, and I'm just going to not look at it and just keep talking, and then we have to have the buzzer cut me off. That's what I'm going to do.
I'll just cut you off in post. I'll stop your argument right at 30 seconds.
That's fine, because that's how it should work. There's no penalty.
Only the points you get in under 30 seconds are the ones that get aired. All right, well. You know what? It was sloppy execution, but I'm sorry, Pat. I'm leaning towards going yes on some of these Rough Riders, and so I'm gonna have to begrudgingly give this one to Jeff.
Cue the music. Celebrate.
Celebration music.
It's my first win. The good one always feels so good. You know, it's just good to get one under our belts, and we're gonna enjoy it for 24 hours, and then we're gonna look forward to next week. That's all it is. It's back to business.
I feel like the fact that Hannah agreed with your actual premise is unfair bias, because you made no salient arguments for it. All it was is that I'm protesting this one. I'm putting this one towards appeal. We'll have to revisit this in a few weeks. I'm gonna go to the court of appeal on this one.
Last week's is still under protest because Pat clearly had already decided before this started.
Yeah, like I should be. You're right. Like I should be talking about predetermined bias. That's a good point.
There may be some bias. Yeah, there may be some bias in the grade debate on a week-to-week basis. But you know what? Don't hate the player, hate the game. We're into our 3-minute warning.
3-minute warning now, or is it? It is the warning.
And that means we're starting with money picks. Pat, would you like to start?
Sure, because I'm playing the role of Jeff Creever this week, because I know how big a fan of this guy he is. I like the matchup for Toronto against Montreal, and at just over $3,000, I like receiver Anthony Coombs in this matchup. So I will go with Toronto receiver Anthony Coombs, and there's some points to be had through the air for Toronto. I think that they will air the ball out in that game because Montreal has had such a hard time in stopping anything through the air, and at $3,030, it's tough to not like that value. Anthony Coombs, Toronto receiver, is my money pick for week 11.
Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. Isn't that what they say? I had him last week. And Pat, I am truly humbled. It is just the best of compliments for you to take him this week and follow suit. Coombs is a good player, and he should do a lot for that offense. He's sort of to the Argos what Nick Dembski is to the Bombers. I'm going with an Argo as well. There are a ton of money pick options this week, I see, but I got to hone in on those Montreal Alouettes and that struggling defense. It's given up 500-plus yards in four straight games. And the one I'm going with is Mario Alford. I tweeted about him before the game, didn't take him because that would just be too risky, and I don't have the, as Pat likes to say, intestinal fortitude to do that. But Alford is fast. He might be the fastest player in the CFL right now, clocked at 4:27 at his pro day going into the NFL draft a few years back, and he's exactly the speed option that the Argos have needed. So last week he was out at field receiver. Not sure if he moves from there, but I look for him to break one long. And all it takes is one big play for him and his speed to give him a real nice fantasy night. Oh, and don't forget, he's also returning kicks, so that's big for him as well.
All right, here comes my great debate bias, because my money pick plays for Saskatchewan, and that's Shaq Evans at $2,500. He has stepped up in Daron Carter's absence. He didn't have the 26-point breakout week, but he did have 13 points last week. He's a nice, cheap bet. I like where he's going. in this offense. Let's move to our lock of the week. These guys will be in our roster this week. Jeff, let's go with you. Where are you going with your lock?
Well, this should come as no surprise given the recent rant that I had about Kamar Jordan, but that's who I'm going with. I do think that Jordan, with the emerging receivers in Edmonton and there being a bit of a cloudy situation in Hamilton with all that talent, I think Kamar Jordan is the most reliable go-to receiver in CFL fantasy right now. And ever since Aaron Rodgers has been out, he's gone off for 29.5 points against the BC Lions. And last week, he had 19.6 points. And all of those coming in the second half. Held off the score sheet in the first half. So, yeah, Kamar Jordan's my guy. And I think he is going to get the ball a ton against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
I'm going with Hamilton's Brandon Banks. I know the price tag is high, but he is in my lineup at over $9,200. But I believe he will be the number one option with a bullet for Jeremiah Mazzoli in what could be a high-scoring showdown with Edmonton on Thursday night. And there's lots of points to be had, and I think a lot of those points and a lot of those looks are going to go Brandon Banks' way. He's already a very reliable and could be right there as the number one option for fantasy receiver already, and I like the matchup on top of that. Without Jalen Saunders, he really will have a ton funneled his way. Brandon Banks, Hamilton, lock of the week.
I'm sticking with Hamilton for my lock of the week, and that's running back Alex Green. He's had back-to-back good weeks his first 2 weeks in the CFL this season. He's up over 40 points in these two starts. I think the matchup's going to be huge for points, and at only $7,200, I think it's a pretty reasonable price for an RB1. So, Alex Green from Hamilton in my lineup.
Pat clearly has the most expensive tastes here between his money pick and his lock of the week. He's going with the most expensive receiver in fantasy with Brandon Banks, and then his money pick was also over $3,000.
Hey, so.
Deep pockets.
I've got expensive tastes. There's no doubt about it. And I don't have $14,000 Mike Riley in my lineup this week, but I do have $9,200 Brandon Banks in there. We'll see how it ends up paying off. Guys, that'll do it for another edition of the CFL Fantasy Podcast. Week 11 is in the books for us. Now let's find out what it has for you. Make sure you go set your lineup, cflfantasy.tsn.ca. The league-wide winner at the end of the year, $10,000 is coming your way. You want to win some more cash? Head on over to CFL Pick'em at pick'em.cfl.ca. Make your picks each and every week. You can win some more cash in that regard. And don't forget to check out The Waggle with James Cebulski and Davis Sanchez each and every week on cfl.ca. Hannah Nordman is on Twitter at HL Nordman. Creever is at Jeff Creever, and I'm at Fan960 Steinberg. Would love to hear from you throughout the week, and would love to have you back with us in week 12. Four games in week 11, and we'll see how we all do, and maybe, hopefully, Creever will have his run of 100-point week snap.
Reign of terror.
Thanks for stopping by. Creever, you've said enough. We need to go. Let's all say goodbye. That'll do it for the Week 11 Fantasy Podcast. Talk to you next week.